March 10th. Our reading in the Old Testament will come from the book of Numbers, chapter 14, verse 1. We'll read through chapter 15, verse 16. And in order to shed a little light and understanding on what we're going to be reading today, let me give a brief commentary on some of what's going on here. When the chorus of despair went up, everyone joined in. We'll read all about this. Their greatest fears were being realized. Losing their perspective, the people were caught up in the emotion of the moment, forgetting what they knew about God's character. As we read about this event in Scripture today, the question comes to mind, what if the people had spent as much energy moving forward as they did moving back? They could have enjoyed their land. Instead, they never even entered it. When a cry of despair goes up around you, consider the larger perspective before you join in. You have better ways to use your energy than to complain. Now, with great miracles, God had led the Israelites out of slavery, through the desolate wilderness, and up to the very edge of the promised land, just as He had promised. He protected them, fed them, and fulfilled every promise. Yet, when encouraged to take that last step of faith and enter the land, the people refused. They were afraid. After witnessing so many miracles, why did they stop trusting God? Why did they refuse to enter the promised land when that had been their entire goal since leaving Egypt? Well, they were afraid. Fear makes crazy people of us all. Often we do the same thing. We trust God to handle the smaller issues, but doubt His ability to take care of the big problems, the tough decisions, the frightening situations. Don't stop trusting God, just as you're ready to reach your goal. He brought you this far. He won't let you down now. We can continue trusting God by remembering all He has already done for us. Now, tearing clothing was a customary way of showing deep sorrow, a mourning or despair. Joshua and Caleb were greatly distressed by the people's refusal to enter the land. Two wise men, Joshua and Caleb, encouraged the people to act on God's promise and move ahead into the land. The people rejected their advice and even talked of stoning them if they didn't be quiet. Hey, don't be too quick to reject advice you don't like. Evaluate it carefully, comparing it to the teaching in God's Word. The advice may be God's message. Well, Moses pleaded with God, asking Him to forgive his people. His plea reveals several characteristics of God. Number one, God is immensely patient. Number two, God's love is one promise we can always count on. Number three, God forgives again and again. And number four, God is merciful, listening to and answering our requests. God has not changed since Moses' day. Like Moses, we can rely on God's love, patience, forgiveness, and mercy. All right, with that, now let's begin our reading today here in the Old Testament. The Old Testament. Numbers chapter 14, verse 1 through chapter 15, verse 16. Then the whole community began weeping aloud, and they cried all night. Their voices rose in a great chorus of protest against Moses and Aaron. If only we had died in Egypt, or even here in the wilderness, they complained. Why is the Lord taking us to this country only to have us die in battle? Our wives and our little ones will be carried off as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt? Then they plotted among themselves, "Let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt." Then Moses and Aaron fell face down on the ground before the whole community of Israel. Two of the men who had explored the land, Joshua son of Nun and Caleb son of Jephunneh, tore their clothing. They said to all the people of Israel, "The land we traveled through and explored is a wonderful land, and if the Lord is pleased with us, He will bring us safely into that land and give it to us. It is a rich land flowing with milk and honey. Do not rebel against the Lord, and don't be afraid of the people of the land. They're only helpless prey to us. They have no protection, but the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them." But the whole community began to talk about stoning Joshua and Caleb. Then the glorious presence of the Lord appeared to all the Israelites at the tabernacle, and the Lord said to Moses, "How long will these people treat me with contempt? Will they never believe me, even after all the miraculous signs I have done among them? I will disown them and destroy them with a plague. Then I will make you into a nation greater and mightier than they are. But Moses objected. What will the Egyptians think when they hear about it? He asked the Lord. They know full well the power you displayed in rescuing your people from Egypt. Now if you destroy them, the Egyptians will send a report to the inhabitants of this land, who have already heard that you live among your people. They know, Lord, that you have appeared to your people face to face, and that your pillar of cloud hovers over them. They know that you go before them in the pillar of cloud by day, and the pillar of fire by night. Now if you slaughter all these people with a single blow, the nations that have heard of your fame will say, the Lord was not able to bring them into the land he swore to give them, so he killed them in the wilderness. Please, Lord, prove that your power is as great as you have claimed. For you said, the Lord is slow to anger and filled with unfailing love, forgiving every kind of sin and rebellion. But he does not excuse the guilty. He lays the sins of the parents upon their children. The entire family is affected, even children in the third and fourth generations. In keeping with your magnificent unfailing love, please pardon the sins of this people, just as you have forgiven them ever since they left Egypt. Then the Lord said, I will pardon them as you have requested. But as surely as I live, and as surely as the earth is filled with the Lord's glory, not one of these people will ever enter that land. They have all seen my glorious presence and the miraculous signs I performed both in Egypt and in the wilderness, but again and again they have tested me by refusing to listen to my voice. They will never even see the land I swore to give their ancestors. None of those who have treated me with contempt will ever see it. But my servant Caleb has a different attitude than the others have. He has remained loyal to me. So I will bring him into the land he explored. His descendants will possess their full share of that land. Now turn around and don't go on toward the land where the Amalekites and Canaanites live. Tomorrow you must set out for the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea. Then the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, how long must I put up with this wicked community and its complaints about me? Yes, I've heard the complaints the Israelites are making against me. Now tell them this, as surely as I live, declares the Lord, I will do to you the very things I heard you say. You will all drop dead in this wilderness. Because you complained against me, every one of you who is 20 years old or older and was included in the registration will die. You will not enter and occupy the land I swore to give you. The only exceptions will be Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. You said your children would be carried off as plunder. Well, I will bring them safely into the land, and they will enjoy what you have despised. But as for you, you will drop dead in this wilderness, and your children will be like shepherds, wandering in the wilderness for 40 years. In this way, they will pay for your faithlessness until the last of you lies dead in the wilderness. Because your men explored the land for 40 days, you must wander in the wilderness for 40 years, a year for each day, suffering the consequences of your sins. Then you will discover what it is like to have me for an enemy. I, the Lord, have spoken. I will certainly do these things to every member of the community who has conspired against me. They will be destroyed here in this wilderness, and here they will die. The 10 men Moses had sent to explore the land, the ones who incited rebellion against the Lord with their bad report, were struck dead with a plague before the Lord. Of the 12 who had explored the land, only Joshua and Caleb remained alive. When Moses reported the Lord's words to all the Israelites, the people were filled with grief. Then they got up early the next morning and went to the top of the range of hills. Let's go, they said. We realize that we have sinned, but now we are ready to enter the land the Lord has promised us. But Moses said, why are you now disobeying the Lord's orders to return to the wilderness? It won't work. Do not go up into the land now. You will only be crushed by your enemies because the Lord is not with you. When you face the Amalekites and Canaanites in battle, you will be slaughtered. The Lord will abandon you because you have abandoned the Lord. But the people defiantly pushed ahead toward the hill country, even though neither Moses nor the Ark of the Lord's covenant left the camp. Then the Amalekites and the Canaanites who lived in those hills came down and attacked them and chased them back as far as Hormah. Then the Lord told Moses, "Give the following instructions to the people of Israel. When you finally settle in the land I am giving you, you will offer special gifts as a pleasing aroma to the Lord. These gifts may take the form of a burnt offering, a sacrifice to fulfill a vow, a voluntary offering, or an offering at any of your annual festivals. And they may be taken from your herds of cattle or your flocks of sheep and goats. When you present these offerings, you must also give the Lord a grain offering of 2 quarts of choice flour mixed with 1 quart of olive oil. For each lamb offered as a burnt offering or a special sacrifice, you must also present 1 quart of wine as a liquid offering. If the sacrifice is a ram, give a grain offering of 4 quarts of choice flour mixed with 1/3 of a gallon of olive oil, and give 1/3 of a gallon of wine as a liquid offering. This will be a pleasing aroma to the Lord. When you present a young bull as a burnt offering, or as a sacrifice to fulfill a vow, or as a peace offering to the Lord, you must also give a grain offering of 6 quarts of choice flour mixed with 2 quarts of olive oil, and give 2 quarts of wine as a liquid offering. This will be a special gift, a pleasing aroma to the Lord. Each sacrifice of a bull, ram, lamb, or young goat should be prepared in this way. Follow these instructions with each offering you present. All of you native-born Israelites must follow these instructions when you offer a special gift as a pleasing aroma to the Lord. And if any foreigners visit you or live among you and want to present a special gift as a pleasing aroma to the Lord, they must follow these same procedures. Native-born Israelites and foreigners are equal before the Lord and are subject to the same decrees. This is a permanent law for you, to be observed from generation to generation. The same instructions and regulations will apply both to you and to the foreigners living among you. Now it's time for our reading in the New Testament. And our narrative today comes from the book of Mark, chapter 14, verses 53 through 72. Let's take a look at what's going on here just before we begin the narrative. This trial that we'll be reading about by the High Council had 2 phases. A small group met at night, and then the full High Council met at daybreak. They tried Jesus for religious offenses, such as calling himself the Son of God, which, according to law, was blasphemy. Well, the trial, of course, was rigged. It was fixed. These religious leaders had already decided to kill Jesus. The Romans controlled Israel, but the Jews were given some authority over religious and minor civil disputes. The Jewish ruling body, the High Council, was made up of 71 of Israel's religious leaders. It was assumed that these men would be just. Instead, they showed great injustice in the trial of Jesus, even to the point of making up lies to use against him. The statement that the false witnesses finally agreed to use as an accusation twisted Jesus' actual words. Jesus did not say, "I will destroy this temple made with human hands." He said, "Destroy this temple, and in 3 days I will raise it up." Jesus was not talking about Herod's temple, but about his own body. Now, to the first question, Jesus made no reply because it was based on confusing and erroneous evidence. Not answering was wiser than trying to clarify the fabricated accusations. But if Jesus had refused to answer the second question, it could have been taken as a denial of his mission. Instead, his answer predicted a powerful role reversal. Sitting at God's right hand in the place of power, he would come to judge his accusers, and they would have to answer his questions. Well, Caiaphas's home, where Jesus was tried, was part of a huge palace with several courtyards. John was apparently acquainted with the high priest and was led into the courtyard along with Peter. Now, it's easy to get angry at the High Council and the Roman governor for their injustice in condemning Jesus. But Peter and the rest of the disciples also contributed to Jesus' pain by deserting him. Now, while most of us may not be like the Jewish and Roman leaders, we are like the disciples, because all of us have been guilty of denying Christ as Lord in vital areas of our lives. We may pride ourselves that we have not committed certain sins. But let's face it and be honest here, we're all guilty of sin. So don't try to excuse yourself by pointing at others whose sins seem worse than yours. God does not grade on the curve. All right, enough of the commentary. Let's read today now here in the New Testament. March 10th, the New Testament. Mark chapter 14, verses 53 through 72. They took Jesus to the high priest's home, where the leading priests, the elders, and the teachers of religious law had gathered. Meanwhile, Peter followed him at a distance and went right into the high priest's courtyard. There he sat with the guards, warming himself by the fire. Inside, the leading priests and the entire high council were trying to find evidence against Jesus so they could put him to death. But they couldn't find any. Many false witnesses spoke against him, but they contradicted each other. Finally, some men stood up and gave this false testimony. "We heard him say, 'I will destroy this temple made with human hands, and in 3 days I will build another made without human hands.'" But even then, they didn't get their story straight. Then the high priest stood up before the others and asked Jesus, "Well, aren't you going to answer these charges? What do you have to say for yourself?" But Jesus was silent and made no reply. Then the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" Jesus said, "I am. And you will see the Son of Man seated in the place of power at God's right hand, and coming on the clouds of heaven." Then the high priest tore his clothing to show his horror and said, "Why do we need other witnesses? You have all heard his blasphemy. What is your verdict?" "Guilty," they all cried. "He deserves to die." Then some of them began to spit at him, and they blindfolded him and beat him with their fists. "Prophesy to us," they jeered. And the guards slapped him as they took him away. Meanwhile, Peter was in the courtyard below. One of the servant girls who worked for the high priest came by and noticed Peter warming himself at the fire. She looked at him closely and said, "You are one of those with Jesus of Nazareth." But Peter denied it. "I don't know what you're talking about," he said. And he went out into the entryway. Just then a rooster crowed. When the servant girl saw him standing there, she began telling others, "This man is definitely one of them." But Peter denied it again. A little later, some of the other bystanders confronted Peter and said, "You must be one of them, because you are a Galilean." Peter swore, "A curse on me if I am lying. I don't know this man you're talking about." And immediately the rooster crowed the second time. Suddenly, Jesus' words flashed through Peter's mind. "Before the rooster crows twice, you will deny 3 times that you even know me." And he broke down and wept. Psalm 53, verses 1 through 6. Echoing the message of Psalm 14, this psalm proclaims the foolishness of atheism. People may say there is no God in order to cover up their sin, to have an excuse to continue in sin, and or to ignore the judge in order to avoid the judgment. Fools, as the Bible refers to them, do not necessarily lack intelligence. No, many atheists and unbelievers are, in fact, highly educated, sophisticated people. Fools are people who reject God, the only one who can save them. That's pretty foolish. Well, God is not affected by what we think of him. We're definitely and eternally affected by what God thinks of us. Now, this psalm begins with the bold claim that there is no God. But by this verse, the true reason for rejecting God has become clear. The reason people reject God has nothing at all to do with God's existence and everything to do with people's sinfulness. In our desire to do wrong, we often treat God as if he doesn't exist. When God passes judgment, it will be too late to apologize and admit we were wrong. Rejection of God will turn into terror of God. Psalm 53, verses 1 through 6. For the choir director, a meditation, a psalm of David. Only fools say in their hearts, "There is no God." They are corrupt and their actions are evil. Not one of them does good. God looks down from heaven on the entire human race. He looks to see if anyone is truly wise, if anyone seeks God. But no, all have turned away. All have become corrupt. No one does good, not a single one. Will those who do evil never learn? They eat up my people like bread, and wouldn't think of praying to God. Terror will grip them, terror like they have never known before. God will scatter the bones of your enemies. You will put them to shame, for God has rejected them. Who will come from Mount Zion to rescue Israel? When God restores his people, Jacob will shout with joy, and Israel will rejoice. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 4. Riches won't help on the day of judgment, but right living can save you from death.